Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack.
Start spreading the news.
Since it is Friday, you know what that music means. Of course, Schomburg Stew is here.
I'm in the house and ready to go.
So if you'd like to call into the podcast and talk to us, especially Stu, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, those blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so you can look for something popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could give that a like while you're over there, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is, oh, come on, you know this by now, it's at Sports Time Radio. You can find me on Twitter as well. I am at BillNoStu on Twitter, but as always, shoot those questions to me and I will forward them along. That's just kind of how we do things. So there you go. We are all set and rolling for a Friday.
Thank God it's Friday, right?
Yeah, or something to that effect. Whatever kind of works out.
Better for you than me, because I don't have to worry about that anymore.
No, you get the luxury of every day being Friday for you. So
every day is Friday for me.
You know. Now, I did see this, and I found it kind of interesting or odd or however you want to look at it, you know. Major League Baseball has teamed up with the Atlantic League, and this is where they are going to try out all their new changes they would like to make to the game. And the first one here on the list is robot umpires.
Wow.
How you feeling about that?
Well, I think that's a shocking change from tradition, and baseball was all about tradition as far as I'm concerned, even though they had the designated hitting rule and all that kind of good stuff. But it would be shocking to see a game played without a live umpire.
Yeah, they would use something that's called TrackMan Radar. And in the article here, it actually just says it would help umpires call balls and strikes. Now you got to remember the umpires are represented by a union, so I don't think replacing umpires with robots is really ever something that's going to happen. So maybe this is just kind of an assist to help with the strike zone?
It could very well be. Now, what happens if the batter doesn't like the call from the robot? Can they argue with the robot?
Yeah, could they hit the robot with the bat and just kind of break it?
So
the game
would be interesting. Yeah, that would be the way to go.
They do in this say that last year 91.9% of all called balls and strikes were correct. So that's a pretty good ratio.
That is. That's definitely a very good ratio. And if they use a robot, umpires, would it be 100% correct?
Yeah, that would be the interesting thing, right? I mean, could you get every call right? Would it get every call right? You know, I mean, could it, you know, how does it measure the difference between a guy like, you know, Aaron Judge, who's what, 6'7 or 6'8, and Jose Altuve, who's 5'10?
Yeah, they'd have to, the robot umpires would have to take that into consideration when calling a ball and strike, wouldn't they? The height of the player.
You know, and would that add to more strikeouts for taller players because they would have the bigger strike zone and, you know, would really have to open up their swings?
Yeah. I somehow don't think this is ever going to take off in a regular major league game.
Yeah, and then rule number two here, banning the shift as we know it. The rule would be two infielders must be on each side of the second base bag when the pitch is released. If you decided to break this rule, the pitch would automatically be called a ball. You know, this is one of those things I would be totally against because I believe people need to learn to hit the other way. And I hate the fact that professional baseball players, we're not talking about, you know, 8, 9, 10-year-old kids who probably would have a difficult time figuring it out, but professional baseball players cry about this.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense to me because, as you point out, if they have such an ability, then when the part of the diamond, the part of the field is open to them, they could just slap the ball into the opposite direction of where the shift is and get a hit.
Yes. You know, you would think, humorously, I don't know if you remember this, but a few years ago, and I'm drawing a blank on what team it was, it might have been the Boston Red Sox, they actually hired a rocket scientist to track exit velocity, how hard a player hits the ball. And in his research, all right, he found out that the player with I believe he was the player with the lowest exit velocity, and this always makes me laugh, was Tony Gwynn. He had a pretty good career, didn't he?
I think his average is pretty good over the course of his very long baseball career. So that shows you that you can't always rely on these kind of statistics when it comes to a Major League Baseball player.
So, yeah, I always thought that was humorous because he only had about, I think it was 3,200 hits and won multiple batting titles and obviously was a first ballot Hall of Famer. But this rocket scientist, who apparently didn't know much about baseball, actually described him as lucky. So Tony Gwynn is probably the luckiest man alive, if that is true.
Right.
So
yeah.
He should be playing the lotto. Should have been playing the lotto, or you know, living in Vegas. One of the two.
One of the most intelligent slap hitters I've ever seen play for the White Sox. Now you know where that would be. Maybe it's before your time.
Yeah, I'm sure one thing I would know, you know, who it was.
Yeah, I would think of Nellie Fox for one thing.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, was Fox one of those guys who could actually pull the ball off into the dugout if he wanted to? So.
Oh, yeah. He was a good slap hitter. Hit the ball. I remember in the All-Star game, he played a little ground ball single up the middle, and they were laughing about it on the air. What kind of a hit is that? Hey, he's on base.
Yeah.
And prior to him, another White Sox player was known for that kind of hitting was Luke Appling, luscious Luke Appling.
Yeah, and it appears, you know, looking at the top five batters that were shifted against, Kyle Seager of the Mariners, Matt Carpenter of the Cardinals, Freddie Freeman of the Braves, Anthony Rizzo of the Cubs, and then Matt Olson of the A's. There was only actually one right-handed batter in the top 30 who had the most shifts against him, and that was Edwin Encarnacion.
Well, there's some pretty good hitters in that group, and I do remember seeing Rizzo slap a couple of balls against the shift for hits last season. A couple of times at least.
Yeah, and then they, you know, they move on here. This is more of a pace of play rule, and this has been out there for a little bit. A relief pitcher has to face a minimum of three batters. You know, because obviously we have these, and again, it's weird because it seems to really curtail the lefties. But Andrew Chafin of the Diamondbacks came in the game 35 times last year to only pitch to one or two batters. Then it was Oliver Perez at 33, Tim Hill and Luis Avion at 30, or I believe it's Avalon, and then Jerry Blevins at 27. Two right-handers made the top 25. So it's really kind of a lefty versus lefty thing that they do, and, you know, then the guy's gone. I you know, does this speed up the game for you?
It might slightly speed up the game, but I'm kind of opposed to that idea. What do you think?
Yeah, it probably would cost a, you know, certain amount of guys jobs because, you know, like Oliver Perez has been hanging around for a really long time because he can get left-handed hitting out. If he's got to face three guys and only one of them is lefty, why are you putting him in the game? So, I think there might be a better way to work this. I think three is too many. Maybe you try it with two to start instead of three. I just think three would be too many because you could stack your lineup knowing a guy can't come out of the game.
Currently, what's the rule now? You have to pitch to one batter if the relief pitcher comes in, barring an injury.
I think I throw one pitch is what I believe, as long as you throw a pitch to a guy.
Just one pitch and they can take him out after that? That rule should be changed. I think it should be at least to one batter. Barring injuries, of course. What I'm saying is that if a guy gets hurt on the mound, obviously he can't continue. Then they have to allow another pitcher to come into the game. But, boy, one pitch, I wasn't aware of that rule. So they could theoretically can come in and throw one pitch and then be removed from the game. But for what reason?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of times when, you know, guys come in, throw one pitch, got the guy to ground out, and then you take him out.
Yeah, okay. As long as there was as long as something happened, that's right. As long as he made it out, I could see that happening. But what if it's a ball or a strike or something like that? They can't take him out.
What they don't expect, I would love to know how they're going to handle it. Say a guy comes in with one out, and he gets the next two batters out. Does he have to come out to start the next inning to get his third batter? And then what if he comes up in that inning in the National League? Do they have to let him hit because he's got a pitch again? Because I don't see this.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like it would be something that would work out too well. And do you know Do you know the rule for the ambidextrous pitcher? There's one ambidextrous pitcher pitching in the majors. Is there any rule?
He has to declare which hand he is going to throw with before he makes his first pitch to the batter. And then he has to stay with that hand for the entire at-bat against that batter. And if he wants to switch next batter, he can.
That's interesting. Now, what happens if he goes up against a switch hitter and the switch hitter wants to switch sides?
Well, he can, you know, like he's got to declare, like say he wants to throw lefty, then the switch hitter would probably get in there right-handed. This rule was all actually brought along because of a situation like that. He faced the switch hitter. The guy got in the box lefty, so the pitcher got on the mound lefty. The guy called time and switched boxes, and the pitcher switched hands. And this happened multiple times before somebody had to make a decision here on what to do, and this is what they came up with. So
yeah, I could see that causing all kind of confusion. And certainly that would slow down the game, too, if this gamesmanship would take place. This is pretty weird situation. They would have to make a rule for that, though, I would think.
And the next change here, this is one I don't think I agree with at all. Move the pitching mound from 60 feet 6 inches to 62 feet 6 inches. So I don't think I like this one.
And what's the reason for that?
Let's see. Do they have if they have actually any reason here for it? So it looks like. It says increasing the pitching distance would certainly have an impact on strikeouts as MLB officials look to stem the rising tide of whiffs. So, again, it just kind of looks like they're trying to find a way to add some more offense into the game because hitters no longer are taught to hit.
Yeah, maybe if it moved back that a couple of feet like that, it will give the bet or another advantage. Of course, more batters with situational batters like they did in the old days, then that rule wouldn't have to be contemplated at all. But unfortunately, as you pointed out, it's all or nothing now with most of the batters in MLB.
Yeah, and they may have to come up with something here because it seems like, I mean, how many games have you watched where it seems like every guy who comes out of the bullpen is throwing 100-plus? So, you know, maybe they need to try lowering the mound again, or I guess maybe eventually they will have to back it up. But I think that would be more of a safety thing because, you know, some of these guys throw hard and just can't control it.
Yeah, you don't want, for example, a Ryan Duren coming in that kind of a situation.
So, yeah, and, you know, I've eaten enough fastballs in the ribs as a batter. I don't want to take a hundo. You know, I don't want to take a 100-mile-an-hour heater in the rib cage. Sorry.
Yeah, and especially during the colder weather, which makes it worse when that happens.
Yeah. So, yeah, and, you know, there are some other interesting things. Like, I guess the Atlantic League is going to experiment with eliminating mound visits except for pitching changes or injuries.
So that means the catcher can't come out to the mound and discuss what the strategy for the next batter?
Yeah, it doesn't. I'm wondering if they're talking managers because it doesn't say anything about the catcher. But I guess technically that is a mound visit, so yeah, I don't know how they would work that out.
What level is the Atlantic League, by the way? What level is the Atlantic League? Is it a single class A?
Actually, I believe they're an independent league.
Okay. So would it be equivalent to a class A type league or maybe a little bit higher?
Maybe a little better. You know, they got involved with MLB because I think it might be the guy who runs the Atlantic League is a former, he used to work in the commissioner's office. So they kind of got together and agreed that this is where they're going to try out these changes. So,
yeah, there's some interesting changes there, but I have a feeling that none of them will be implemented at the major league level ever.
Yeah, well, the one that may be here is they are also going to use the 20-second pitch clock. And, you know, that looks like something that we're going to get one way or the other.
So if the pitcher exceeds that limit, it's an automatic ball.
Yeah, I believe that's the plan. And I can imagine the first time that happens, we're going to see an ejection. So
yeah, 20. Well, you know the game, the pace of the game slows down in critical situations when there are men on base. And yeah, I don't think that too many pitchers are gonna adhere to that 20-second rule.
Yeah, it's interesting here. They did a study, and they found featured similar totals of pitches, base runners, and batters. They went back to 1984. These games lasted about 2 hours and 31 minutes. They went ahead 10 or 20 years to 2014, and these same games were taking 3 hours and 6 minutes, but 9 of those minutes were for extra commercials.
Yes. That's the unfortunate aspect of the game now with the commercials, the extra commercials.
Time between pitches was the, as they put it, primary villain of the longer games, pitchers taking too much time to make the next pitch. That was the biggest factor. So, I've got a feeling we're going to see a pitch clock here in, 2020? Yeah, so 2020, I think we'll get a pitch clock.
Well, let me give you a scenario that could theoretically happen. It's a playoff game, an important playoff game. Last of the ninth, 3-3, bases loaded, two outs. Full count on the batter, and he exceeds the 20-second limit and forces in the run. You think the would the fans like that? Would you like that?
I believe the fans from the winning team would like that. The fans from the losing team like it.
Yeah. I would even if I were rooting for the Cubs and it happened to them and they won the game because of that, I wouldn't like to see that ending.
No, it would be a crappy way to win a game. And I did look it up here. The Atlantic League is an independent baseball league located primarily in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast United States.
Okay.
It does say they have one team located in the Texas League. So, but yeah, it looks like they're an 8-team league. See if I can find a list of the teams here. Yeah, here you go. Here's some names for you: the Lancaster Barons, the Lancaster Barnstormers, the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs. I got to say that's my favorite team already. The Sugar Land Eaters, who are the defending champions. And the York Revolution, they make up the Freedom Division. The Liberty Division has the High Point Rockers, the Long Island Ducks, the New Britain Bees, and the Somerset Patriots. So there you go.
There's some interesting names for sure. I'm wondering if any player from that league ever made it to the majors?
You know, I'm sure guys have, you know, bounced back. You know, it's kind of the place you go to get a second chance. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's been guys who have, you know, made their way through here. Here you go. They have some names who have played here. Tim Raines and Ricky Henderson, obviously both in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Roger Clemens, Scott Kazmir, Dontrell Willis, Juan Gonzalez, John Rocker, and Jose Canseco. And then they go on for guys who have coached or managed in the league. They have Gary Carter, Tommy John, Bud Harrelson, Gary Gaetti, and Sparky Lyle. So there have
That's interesting that some players and managers and coaches are pretty prominent in the played in that league.
So yeah, and I do remember seeing Ricky Henderson play in that league before he came back to, I think it might have been San Diego. So but yeah, it looks like the league has been around. This is going to be their 21st season.
Yeah, they've been around quite a while.
So, and let me see if they have a statistics on their website. Let me see if they go back to last year and maybe I can see if there's any names that look familiar at all. So, well, there is an A. Rodriguez, but I'm guessing that's not Alex. So they do have the only name I know right off the bat here. It looks like Travis Schneider, who was kind of a journeyman outfielder with the Indians and the Pirates. And I think he may have won a World Series with the Giants. He was here last year. It looks like Jerome Walton played here last season.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, a couple of hitter names there. I don't know what kind of let's see if they have any pitching stats here that jump out at us. So I don't recognize any of the pitchers' names right off the bat. So they do have a guy with the last name of Hamburger, though, so I would be rooting for him.
It's an interesting name. Well, it sounds like in some cases a few players have resurrected their career by playing there and then being brought back to the majors.
So, obviously if it's hung around for what's coming up on 21 years, it should be, you know, it's got a little backing there. So. But yeah, they're the test ground right now for Major League Baseball. So we'll see how
That works.
See how it goes. And, yeah, you know, how if these work out and how they go. I'd be interested to see how the mound test went with those guys throwing from 2 feet farther back. That's got to be a gigantic adjustment for a pitcher to have to make.
And you were talking about the robot umpires. Is that just for behind the plate, I assume?
Yeah, it looks like it's for balls and strikes.
So they'll still have a traditional umpire at first base and at third base and whatever.
Yeah, and the way it's looking is it looks like they'll still have a home plate umpire. It's just the robot is just going to be kind of there to help them, and I'm under the impression if he misses a close call that they would change it.
Well, that's going to delay the game. Well, if there's a change in the in the call, wouldn't that, and that's just what they're looking not to have happen.
Yeah, well, you know, well, again, we'll have to see. Remember, replay was supposed to speed up the game, and it doesn't. So
yeah, now there might be a replay and a ball and a strike, and the batter will say, I challenge that call.
Yeah. So, well, you know,
we'll
have
works,
to
it doesn't,
let's see.
It doesn't thrill me. It doesn't thrill me very much.
No. You know, and then just some side baseball news for White Sox fans here. Esteban Loaiza, who you remember had his best career, his career year with the White Sox back in 2003, finished second in the Cy Young voting when he was 21-9. Finally got sentenced today for his cocaine arrest. I don't know if you remember, he was arrested in February of last year with 44 pounds of cocaine. He was finally sentenced today. He's going to get 3 years in prison.
That's
so,
it? I thought it would be closer to 7 or 8 years myself when I saw that, but I was wrong.
The prosecution asked for five. The prosecution just wanted to give him five. His attorney, of course, wanted, you know, less. He wanted two. So they went a little deeper than that. He's going away for 3 years.
Kind of split in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. But, yeah, played from 1990 to 2000.
Yeah, this guy was a top pitcher at one time. I mean, at one time a top pitcher, and to see what happened to him afterwards is pretty sad.
He didn't make a ton of money, but he still had to, had to have made, I would guess, over $10 million in his career. So you got to wonder what the lure was of, I mean, I know there's obviously a ton of money involved in that, but, you wonder, I got to look here and see what his career earnings were. Yeah, he actually made over a little over $43 million in his career. So you got to wonder where his money is or was or went.
Yeah, what happened there? And dealing cocaine can't be the safest profession in the world either. I mean, it's got to be some danger involved and risk, not just from being caught by the authorities, but by the cartels and everybody else involved with this sale of that stuff.
So, yeah, definitely not the safest job. So,
no.
He's going away for 3 years, so obviously he won't be getting in the Hall of Fame. Oh.
Yeah, some of these sentences are very strange sometimes, some of these sentences. You see a guy getting a sentence of 3 years for that, and then I think about the governor, our ex-governor, sentenced for, 13, 14 years, and I wonder about that also. And it's hard. I guess the white-collar crimes are very difficult in terms of how much time they should spend behind bars when they do something illegal.
It probably won't shock anybody type of news here. The Astros named Justin Verlander their opening day starter today. So,
well, that's not a shocker, is it?
No, not at all. That was about as big a surprise as when the Cubs named John Lester. So,
yeah. Well, in 3 weeks the season starts. A week before that, when that one game they're playing overseas, but
I think they're playing two.
Two games, that's right, two games. But the official, for most of the other teams, it's starting around the 27th, 28th of March?
Yeah, 28th is the actual start date there. So we're set and ready to go for that date. You know, the first two games are you know, and you know, I don't even know how you want to describe them. They're not going to mean much because, you know, they're going to play the games and then come back and then do more spring training. So, yay.
Yeah, the way this winter has gone, I suggest to the fans attending opening day, especially in some of the cold weather cities, to dress accordingly.
Yeah, yeah, it's, you know, especially because I think we went over it, I think it was last Friday, and I think we realized that Minnesota, the Twins open at home. So, you know, to be honest with you, I think if they gave me free tickets to that game, I wouldn't go. You know, I can imagine it's going to be 30 degrees.
Yeah, years ago when they started the season in what I think it was mid-April, roughly, or early to mid-April, sometimes you would have some really nice weather for opening day. I remember one day originally it was in the 80s for a mid-April opener, but I don't think we've seen too many of those anymore with the early start.
Well, I saw next week we actually have towards the middle of the week it's going to get into the 50s. So that, you know, that's not too bad if they're out there.
No.
You know, if they're out there in the daytime, you can deal with that.
No, it's when it's 30 degrees and they're playing when it's 30 degree weather with a bad wind chill factor that you wonder if it, something like that could have been avoided.
So, yeah, and, you know, it's tough. You know, I mean, and obviously the easiest solution is, of course, well, why don't you just open in the warm weather cities or the domes, but obviously those teams don't want to eat up all their home games at the beginning of the year. You know, it's not really fair to them to say, hey, we're going to play all your games at home. So, you just, you know, you hope, but it doesn't always work out that way. So
some of the visiting teams that play in cold weather, but start the season in a warm venue, can use that and really get off to a very, very nice start to the campaign. It's happened before. They start out even though they play their home games in a cold weather, they start out playing in Arizona or Los Angeles or Florida, and they use that as an impetus to really have a nice start to the season. And it has happened on many occasions.
So, yeah, it's definitely interesting. And, you know, I was wondering, I had Mr. Fantasy had called me right before the podcast started because our Money League Fantasy draft has started. We couldn't all get together, so we're doing it online through the Internet, so it's going to take forever. So we got it started going, and him and I actually we got the last pick in the first round at 16. So we got 16 and 17 because it's a serpentine draft. So we went with Corey Kluber and Justin Verlander to start, and now we're coming back up for two more picks, and it looks like we're going to go with Joey Votto and Robbie Ray. So we're going to build up a pretty strong starting pitching staff to get going. But he had an interesting question that I could kind of relay to you. He was interested on, you know, how where the Cubs were going to start this year. So I looked up their schedule, and I noticed that they have their first 9 games on the road this year. They go to Texas, they go to Atlanta, and then they go to Pittsburgh before they come home. You know, if they come home under 500, say they're 4-5 or 3-6, are you going to be disappointed with that start to the season?
Absolutely. Absolutely, because, first of all, they're starting out in Texas, and Texas is the last place club. The weather should be decent playing in Texas, so you'd like to see them get out to a decent start there. Now, of course, Atlanta is fairly warm also, but Atlanta is the defending champions in the NL East, and that won't be an easy 3 games. And then Pittsburgh always seems to be a 500 team, so once again, nothing is easy. Nothing's going to start out easy. If they start out 3-6, it would confirm my worst fears about the impending season. As you know, I'm not going to pick them very high this season. Oh, I don't want to give it away, though. I haven't sent them my picks yet.
Yeah, I have to. I have to still work on mine. I have a couple things I have to iron out here before we get going. You know, before we actually make them official.
Right. So, you don't want to make it too early because injuries can happen. Something can happen, and could affect your decision making process.
Well, you know, I was already worried because, you know, I was looking at Luis Severino as a possible AL Cy Young pick because, you know, we always try to stay away from the obvious choices. You know, that's one of the things we do to make it a little more fun for us. So I was looking at him thinking he could have a big, big year for the Yankees, and he has shoulder inflammation, and now he's been shut down for 2 weeks. So, you know, it's like, well, maybe I won't be going there.
Yeah, you might have to change your mind about that one. And there have been some starting pitchers who have had some problems during the spring already.
So, yeah, you know, and, you know, there are these guys who always run into that, you know, what they call dead arm syndrome, you know, this time of year. I know I just saw that Chris Sale was suffering from it. So, you know, it's just one of the things that pitchers seem to go through.
Yeah, and I would think that the teams playing in Florida as compared to teams playing in Arizona, at least for this spring training, have the advantage because the weather has been unseasonably cool in Arizona and nice and 80-degree weather in Florida. So those teams should certainly be in better shape for the coming regular season than the teams that compete and train in Arizona, at least for this year.
So, yeah, well, they haven't had the best of weather in either place this year for spring training. A lot of rain, even in Arizona.
Yeah,
which is weird.
You expect the rain in Florida, but not in Arizona. And I think today wasn't even going to hit 70 today in the overcast sky. So that's not great weather for spring training either.
So, yeah, and you know, and then I saw this story the other day, and I just haven't been able to figure this one out. So I'm hoping you can explain this to me. I don't know if you saw it, but Stephen Wright, oddly enough, a right-handed pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, he tested positive for what was a growth hormone-releasing peptid 2. It's GHRP2, obviously. That makes sense. He got an 80-game suspension. What I'm trying to figure out here, Stu, and you can help me, is this guy's a knuckleballer. How does a PED help him?
Yeah, you would think that he wouldn't need that kind of performance-enhancing drugs. And, of course, he's taken his medicine, but he's still not sure what he took that would cause this to take place because it was completely innocent on his part. And, oh, I've heard that before, too. That seems to be the norm, isn't it, for the pitchers, 80 games for a PED suspension.
Yeah, and, you know, he had quite a few injuries last year, and he was actually suspended for 15 games last year for a domestic abuse policy issue.
Yes, that's right. I saw that.
So he only played 20 games for the Red Sox last year. But, you know, he wasn't bad. He was 3-1 with a 2.68 ERA, and he did save a game. You know, he made four starts for him. So he's been pretty solid when he's healthy. But, yeah, I just kept trying to figure out how it helps a knuckleballer. It just didn't make sense to me.
Unless he took something that he thought maybe would solve an inflammation problem. But he took the wrong stuff. Obviously, he took the wrong stuff.
So, yeah, I just, you know, the more and more I hear about it or I read about it, I just kind of keep shaking my head. It's like, you know, you don't want to throw a knuckleball hard, you know, and he doesn't have a great heater or anything besides that, because if he did, he wouldn't be a knuckleball pitcher. So, you know, that's how guys kind of find this. And like, yeah, I don't know. He's a buff knuckleball pitcher, I guess. I don't know how else to look at it.
I'm not sure about that, Doesn't seem like there are too many more knuckleball pitchers currently in baseball now. There used to be a little bit more of them years ago. You don't see too many anymore.
Well, you know, now it seems like if you're developing a knuckleball, it seems like it's the desperate plea to save your career because now it's just everybody throws miles an hour. So, you know, it's as weird as it sounds. It's just like, yeah, go out there and throw 100. You know, that's all that matters. Just go out there and go and keep going and keep going. And like, okay, great.
Until you have Tommy John surgery.
Right. Well, you know, which most kids have in, you know, high school or college now, I believe, to just to get
yeah.
it out of the way, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that's just one of those odd things. So, but yeah, you know, switching up sports because I wanted to, you know, wanted to run this by you because, you know, as you know, we talked about a little bit, you will be here, you will be joining me Tuesday because Dan is going to the Bulls-Lakers game. Now, it's come out that Luke Walton actually admitted this in the media that the Lakers are going to, well, I guess the proper term would say watch LeBron James minutes the rest of the season. So I'm guessing they're giving up on a playoff run and they're going to limit what they do with him. You know, I've heard, you know, like a lot of the experts just keep saying they should shut him down and not play him and let him be done for the year. You know, obviously, if you bought a ticket to the Bulls-Lakers game, aren't you expecting to see LeBron? And how upset are you going to be if, say, maybe he takes that game off?
I don't think the fans will be very happy if that that happens because a lot of them, like you pointed out, you know, when you don't have a winning team, you want to see the top player in the league play at least. That's one of the reasons you may have bought a ticket for that one.
That actually is the reason Dan bought a ticket. They wanted him and he wanted to take his nephew to see LeBron James play. So,
and
you know, that's the only reason he's going.
And is he going to play or is he going to be definitely ruled out or not sure yet?
Well, so far all they said is, you know, they're going to limit his minutes. So, we won't actually know until game time gets here and, you know, we see if he's, you know, a DNP or what they decide to do. And I know he is he is playing a lot of minutes. So it's not like, it would hurt them to back off a little bit, especially if they're not going to find their way into the playoffs. I actually want to double check and see how many minutes he's averaging a game this year.
Yeah,
he's
down,
playing.
They would probably cut him down to 20, 25 minutes a game now if they want to do that.
He's playing a little over 35 minutes a game. That's actually down from his last two seasons. But, you know, he did miss some time with a groin injury and, you know, that other stuff earlier this year. He's only played in 47 games. So
you figure maybe 20, 25 minutes a game for the rest of the season for him?
Yeah, you know, I think that would probably be a solid number for them to, you know, kind of look at there because, obviously I'm trying to think they lost – who did they lose to the other day? I think it was the Nuggets they got blown out by, just to add a little more, a little more – you know, dirt to the pile of their playoff life there. So, yeah, I just don't know if, you know, they can save this or do anything. But, yeah, I always kind of think about that fan who, you know, gets to go to one game a year because this is the only game, you know, Dan is going to. You know, tickets aren't cheap and he's sitting up pretty high as it is. So, you know, you get to go to this game and, oh, well, LeBron's not playing or you'll get to see him for 20 minutes after
yeah.
you spend all this money on a ticket. So
it's not much fun going to a NBA game and sitting in the nosebleed seats. It's pretty difficult to see the action.
Yeah, but sadly, you know, with the way we talked about all the time with the way tickets are, it's, you know, pretty much all you can, you know, some people can really afford.
Right.
So,
even those seats are not cheap, as you pointed out.
Yeah. But I guess we'll see how this goes tomorrow night. You know, the Lakers are hosting the Celtics. They're the primetime game on ABC tonight, or tomorrow night, excuse me. So we'll have to see if, you know, how many minutes he ends up logging and if they really do monitor him.
I've read some negative things about the Celtics recently, and I'm trying to figure out why, because they're obviously in the playoffs, and maybe they haven't won as many games this year as people expected them to win.
Yeah, well, there were some pretty crazy predictions for them. I heard one guy predict them to win 67 games this year, and obviously that's not going to happen. You know, it seems like the biggest problem they have for some reason is, you know, Kyrie Irving just keeps giving these odd interviews, and I think he believes he's at that top-notch superstar level, so he kind of acts like one, but I don't think people take him seriously as one of those guys. And apparently it seems like there is or there was some chemistry issues. I know they've been playing better as of late. I think they beat the – I think they blew the Warriors out at home. And then have they played again since then? I'm trying to remember. But, yeah, a weird situation, you know.
I'm wondering if they're going to win 50. Will they win 50 games this year? I'm not sure they're going to win 50 games.
Well, let me see if I can find their schedule here. We can take a quick look and see who they have. You know, obviously they're on their West Coast swing right now, and they should get a win against the Lakers tonight. You would think that would be that would definitely be a possibility. They're 40-26 going into tonight's game. So you got
to
figure
they win 10. They have to win 10 out of the remaining games to get in. But I don't know if they're going to do it.
So yes, well, you know, like I said, you figure you give them the win, and it was tomorrow night. I keep saying tonight because obviously we're here. But yeah, you figure they get the win tomorrow night against the Lakers. They have a couple tough games left on this. They have the L.A. Clippers before they come home against the Kings. So I won't be surprised if those games. Then they have the Hawks, who they should beat. Then they have two more tough games against Denver and Philly. I guess it depends what Philly team shows up there.
Yeah. So they've got to go 10-6 to get 50 wins. So what do you think it's possible?
Yeah. I don't think so. After that, they close out with Charlotte, San Antonio, Cleveland, Indiana, and Brooklyn. And I expect them to beat the Lakers. I expect them to beat the Clippers at home and then the Hawks. So they would need, 43. They would need 7 more wins. They would need to win out, and that's not going to happen.
No. I figure they'll be 2 or 3 games short of wind up 2 or 3 games short of 50 wins, maybe 46, 47
yeah,
wins.
Yeah, if they end up at 46 or 47, that would be a good landing spot for them. I am a little surprised they didn't get to 50. Yeah, they've had a lot of team chemistry issues and other just odd stuff this year. So, but they seem to be getting it together at the right time because, you know, we're heading in the playoffs, and that's when you want to be playing your best basketball.
Now, what seed are they going to be, a 4, a 5?
You know, it looks like they're going to be a 5 depending on, you know, how obviously, you know, the rest of the season plays out because, you know, we just saw Philadelphia take a tumble here against the Bulls. And, you know, they haven't really mentioned when Joel Embiid will be coming back. So, you know, if he's out, maybe they switch spots because, you know, well, they could. You know, the Celtics are only 2 games out of being the 3 seed. So it's a possibility they could jump to there. I don't know, you know, let me see who else. Yeah, because there's a big gap between 5 and 6. The Celtics have 40 wins. Detroit is in 6th place with 32 wins.
Now, are they 500? They're not even 500. Are they under 500, Detroit?
Yeah. Game over right now. They're 32-31.
But the 7 and 8 seeds are a joke. They're what, about 4 or 5 games below 500, both of those, the 7 and 8 seeds?
The Nets in the 7th seed are 1 game over 500, but the Heat is 4 games under as the 8th seed.
Yeah, it's kind
so,
of.
So yeah, there's a. You know, is a chance we'll get three under 500 teams in the Eastern Conference playoffs, but a couple of them will be right there at the 500 level.
It's impressive how strong Milwaukee has become over the last couple of years.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, in Toronto, again, you know, they've been good for quite a while now, and just nobody seems to notice.
Yeah, and they don't seem to get the job done in the playoffs, though. They don't seem to go very deep into the playoffs.
Well, you know, that's what Kawhi Leonard is supposed to fix this year, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
So, you know, that will be a, you know, an interesting deal there. But there are, you know, if you're a basketball fan, the Mickey Mouse Network has two really good matchups on tonight. The 7 o'clock game has the 76ers at the Rockets. And then the 9:30 game has the top two teams in the West. It's the Nuggets at the Warriors.
Well, that should be a good game.
Yeah, they'll probably score, you know, 280 points in it.
I was going to say, that'll be a very high-scoring game. Right on paper, you think it's going to be, 150, 140, realistically speaking? 130, 140?
You know, of course, you know, we do have the Pistons in town to play the Bulls tonight, so we get to watch that.
That'll be exciting, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, yeah, the Bulls can screw up their chance to get a good draft pick again by picking up another win, like they have a tendency to do. So,
yeah, they are certainly not doing themselves any favors in securing a good lottery choice.
Yeah, no, they're definitely bad at tanking. So. And I'm trying to see how many games have they won this year? Let me find them. They're sitting at 19, so there's two teams under them in the East, and I think just one team in the West. Yeah, just one team in the West. So they have, you know, they have the fourth worst record right now, so maybe they could get lucky and get a ping pong ball to drop for them. But, you know, if they win too many more games.
Yeah, the ping pong ball has to drop.
Too many more games. You know, and I think they need to be in the top. So they've got to move up at least one spot.
Right. Well, you think that the ping pong ball is not going to drop in their favor this year because D. Rose is not in the lottery.
Yeah. Well, how interesting would it be? Think about this one. The Lakers, of course, aren't going to make the playoffs, so they will go into the draft lottery. Now, they would have a very slim chance of moving up, but would you be at all surprised if they magically moved up?
No. Because we've seen it happen too many times before to surprise us anymore.
Yeah, and I think the rules now prohibit them from moving all the way to the top pick. I think about the best teams like that can't go all the way up. I'll have to see if I can double-check that or figure it out. But, yeah, I wouldn't actually be shocked at all if, you know, the draft came around and all of a sudden, oh, look, here's the Lakers picking in the top three, and they get a game-changing talent in the draft. So,
yeah, they would love that, wouldn't they? A major market, and we've seen it happen before. Now, other than the top three draft choices, are there anybody else from 4 through 8 that are any good this year? Haven't heard too many things about the strength of this year's upcoming draft.
Yeah, you know, you always hear things, but hang on. Oh, there we go.
Bless you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, you just kind of wonder, you know, the NBA draft is always just kind of so hit or miss as it is. You know, like I'm looking here, there's actually a mock draft out where they just go by the record. So the Bulls are picking fourth. The top three in each draft are Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, and then RJ Barrett. The one guy does have Barrett going second and Morant third. The Bulls at four, one of them has them taking Darius Garland, who I know nothing about, but apparently he's a point guard from Vanderbilt. And the other draft has them taking DeAndre Hunter, who's a small forward from Virginia.
Do either of those names excite you?
No, I don't think either of those guys are game changers. Yeah, and looking at it here, I mean, you probably need to be in the top. They need to be in the top three because those guys appear to be guys who are, you know, making the difference there. You got to land Williamson, Barrett, or Morant. And, you know, even Morant, you know, while he is a fantastic player, there will be questions about him because he plays at a smaller school.
You never know about those guys if they can step it up to the next level because of the level of the competition they've experienced over their college career.
Yeah, you know, he may be the guy out of three that takes the longest to develop. You know, I might actually be happier to see the Bulls draft like Cam Reddish out of Duke, you know, because he, you know, little more high-profile program. He's another young kid. But, you know, we'll see what they do. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't have any confidence whatsoever in Paxson and Foreman making a good pick.
They've missed more than they've hit. They've had a couple of decent choices over the years, but nothing great.
No, you know, because I kind of look back. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, Markkanen looks like a good player, but I don't think he's the superstar in a championship team. You know, he kind of looked more like that second guy. So, you know, maybe that works out. You know, obviously the jury is still out on Wendell Carter because he's missed a big chunk of the season with the injury.
Right.
So,
for
you know,
the year.
You're there. But, yeah, other than that, I mean, you know, we'll have to see, you know, if or what they can come up with.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
But, yeah,
Markkanen does for a full year if he's healthy. That's the critical thing, how he does if he's completely healthy-free for one season and see what he can do, what he can really do. Because he looks promising player.
Yeah, he does. You know, he does. He looks like he's going to – you know, I guess the thing that kind of frightens me a little bit is he reminds me of Kevin Love, who just, you know, is a really good player but is hurt all the time. So – you know, that's just those one of the things.
And that injury didn't even happen in a regular game. That happened in preseason.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, you just got to, you know, and again, obviously it's a waiting game. You never know. I mean, Zion Williams looks like a sure thing. Of course, we never know really for sure who's what, but you know, we'll just kind of have to wait and see. And, you know, he still hasn't played since he had that minor knee injury.
No, I think he's been out quite a while.
You know, so, yeah, you know, you got to kind of wonder, you know, why they're holding him out.
Yeah. When I think of sure things, by the way, I always think of Sam Bowie.
Yeah. So, you know, there have been those guys. You know, the NBA has quite a slew of them that have out. So, you know, it's possible. Oh, I'm a little bit of a